Hey there, and welcome to episode number 20 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. In this episode, I talk to Leon Todd from the band Ragdoll from Perth, Australia. Now, if you haven't heard of Ragdoll, have a listen to this. So in this interview, we talk a lot about his influences. One of his influences is a band called King's X, which is a great band, which personally I like very much as well. He also demonstrates some great little exercises on the guitar and gives some great advice on how to practice by making it fun and exciting at the same time. We also get to listen to a few tracks off his album, Back to Zero, from the band Ragdoll. So let's go over to the interview now with Leon Todd.
G'day, Adam. How are you? Can you hear me, mate?
I can. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, good.
So I thought we might start off with just about the band first, just so people know who you are and who you're all about.
Yeah, so I want to say probably a project which has been ongoing maybe for 10, 11 years, but we've sort of been very active for the last 6 years playing in a trio, Ragdoll.
Yep.
Your classic power trio kind of thing where the bass player sings. And yeah, we released an EP the end of 2011 and from that managed to get some interest in the States, and we've spent basically the last 5-6 years either slogging it away at home to, you know, put the funds together to tour overseas independently or touring overseas independently. So we've released 3 EPs, a compilation album and a full length came out. So heart melodic hard rock trio, that's what I spend most of my time doing. And as I was saying before, I do quite a bit of teaching and trying to do the YouTube thing as well, doing tutorials and gear reviews as well.
Yeah, yep. Actually, I found out about you through a guy in America.
Oh, wow.
I did an interview. There's a band called Edensphere. Cesare Gray, his name is. And he's like, oh, you've got to check out this band, Ragdoll. I said, from Australia.
And, how handy.
Yeah, I know. So it's funny, like, hearing about you guys from, you know, the States.
Yeah, I mean, and for us, aside from Perth, where we have, you know, a small following, and our best following is probably in Melbourne. It makes sense for the type of music we play. Aside from that, most of the market for us is overseas. We've played quite a bit in the States, which we've been very fortunate to do. So we have I always justify to saying it's probably the same small percentage of the population, but when you've got 20 times the population, it scales up very quickly.
Oh, for sure.
For us, Perth's a very isolated city, so it almost works in our favor that the appeal happens to lay overseas rather than at home, because, you know, once you get on the plane and once you get to a place like Europe or America, suddenly there's so many more places to play. If we were stuck, you know, not that it'd be a bad thing, you know, if our primary audience laid at home, it would be far more difficult to be touring all the time.
Yeah, yeah. You've done some huge supports over in the States too, some of the bands you supported.
Oh, yeah. I had this sort of parallel life when I was straight out of school, where I went to uni and I did an honours degree in maths. And, you know, I sort of had this real crossroads moment where, you know, I obviously loved playing music and I really enjoyed the degree I did, where, you know, I kind of had a set of goals where it was like, you know, would be my ultimate dream is, you know, to sort of go on tour with a band. And, you know, it would be great to just see some of these bands in concert and to end up on festival bills and, you know, doing supports with your favorite bands is, the pinch yourself moments. And we talk about it often. It's like, can you believe this stuff happened, you know? Because we still rehearse in basically a garage in Perth in the suburbs, and it's still very, very true to the original kind of mission statement for us. So, we've been really fortunate, I think, to just have the opportunities, let alone to be in a position to take them.
Yeah, and you pretty much did them every year, haven't you, the festivals?
Yeah. This is actually the first year since 2012 that we haven't gone overseas, and that was, you know, our singer Ryan had another kid this year, and
that's fair enough.
That was kind of a good opportunity to go, hey, let's stop for, you know, maybe 12 months and spend some time writing another album, and everybody can kind of, you know, enjoy some kind of normalcy in their life for a while.
Yep.
It's actually been quite nice.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I had a listen to the album, Back to Zero. It's great.
Cool. Really good. I'm glad you're liking it.
Yeah,
really,
for sure.
Really glad.
Wrote most of the songs on that?
Yeah, the way we tend to work is I've got a little studio set up at home, and, you know, a basic Pro Tools thing with slate drums and things like that, and I can just sit at home and play guitar. I normally get up in the morning before I have to teach in the afternoons and stuff like that, so I can kind of spend the bulk of the day writing or playing around with ideas, and I normally take these really rough semi-finished ideas to the guys, and we'll just sit there and sort of, you know, listen to 20 or 30 ideas and go, yeah, you know, out of all of these are the ones that everybody kind of likes. And then we sit there and dissect them and pick them apart and rebuild them. So it's a cool sort of multi-stage process, where it's like, I always see myself as like the guy who goes down, you know, to the gardening store and buys the seeds. And then, you know, we all actually do the gardening and tend to the plants. And
yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, like I'm just the guy who goes down to the shops and buys the ingredients, and then we all cook.
Yeah. So with the writing, so now, I mean, I was in the original band for years with my brother, a band called Eclipse, like an original rock band. This is back in like 89 to 93, you know, it's a long time ago.
Wow.
Back when the hair was down here.
Yeah, I was going to say that would have been the best time to be doing it as well. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we did a little tour over in like Ohio, Detroit, that way, just playing local clubs and high schools and everything.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, we used to try and get together maybe like once a week to do the writing. So do you do it like that, or do you just do it as you write the songs and when they come up, then get together? Or do you try and do like a regular writing session?
Yeah, at the moment we try to get together once a week. That's sort of the thing. We get together and we all sit around and go, hey, out of all the stuff that's sitting in the, you know, ready to go list, what do we want to work on? And it's we haven't always worked like that. I guess before we all had families and stuff like that, it was kind of, well, one of us has kids. I'm married as well, and I think as you grow and mature, the focus goes from band being this all-consuming part of your life to still being a really important part of it, and you kind of realize that you need that balance between everything else. And so we've gone from that sort of lock yourself in a room until you come up with something good mentality to, hey, we've only got a limited amount of time, how can we be really organized and maximize it? And doing that with this next round of songs that's coming up, we've just worked so much faster and so much more efficiently, and we're all so much happier with the results. So That's been a nice way to do it, sort of go, okay, let's wait until we reach this threshold value of, you know, material that needs to be worked on, and then let's just go in and absolutely pump it out as quickly as possible. And it's really fun that way. You know, you get that satisfaction of like, great, we've arranged a song in 2 hours, which I think if you've been playing long enough, you should be able to do that, still be really creative in that time and set yourselves those. It's like the classic saying, you know, the more limitations you have, often the more focus your artwork will come out.
We are waiting for the sun to shine. Shed my skin, lift the darkness from my eyes. No more tears to cry. Yeah. And with the melody lines for the vocals, Ryan, does he come up with all those, or you have input with that as well?
Yeah, it really depends. There's some things for me that, like on the album, the first proper song on there, Shine, which is, you know, the second track after a sort of ambient intro, that was something I was working on years and years ago, and I forgot about it. And it was a little thing I was playing around with on the guitar and just playing around with some harmony stuff, and, you know, wrote this little melody, and I can't even remember writing the words for it. And I think it was maybe 2 years ago when we were coming back from the States, I had my phone at the time, and I was just, you know, I was on a plane or something, and I was just like, well, I'll take the opportunity to organize some of my files and delete a bunch of crap before I get home. And yeah, I was going through iTunes, and I was like, oh, there's a little folder in here which says like demo songs, you know, and I just out of curiosity listened to a couple of things, and then this song, like, at some point I'd obviously had him come into the studio and sing it, and the arrangement was totally different, but that chorus and that melody line was there, and I was listening to it going, you know what, this is pretty cool. And as I was sort of sitting on the plane, I was like, all right, this would be a good one to go back home and arrange and redo. And I managed to find the session when I got back home, and I took out that one thing and built a song around it. So I'll either kind of work like that, where it's like, hey, I've got a hook or a melody or something, and the music will take care of itself, or it's the other way around, where, you know, we'll have a particular set of riffs or things like that, and they'll sit around and we'll all look at each other like, we have to finish this, don't we? Yeah, I guess we do. And it's sort of first one to come up with something that sticks normally gets to keep it. But certainly with the earlier stuff, there was a lot of Ryan and I would either sit down together and flesh stuff out, or I'd kind of come in and say, hey, you know, I had idea XYZ, let's try them. But more recently, even on the last album, there was a bunch of stuff where, you know, I might write something and he'd go, yeah, that was really, really cool, but that inspired me to write something completely different over it, and that kind of process. So for me, I always, whenever you hear something totally fresh for the first time, you're often very enamored with it. So I love hearing stuff that he's written, and same thing for the next bunch of songs. There's kind of a bunch of ideas where it's being like, hey, are you cool to handle this, and maybe I'll handle these ones, and just that kind of delegation of no one's really precious in the band, which is live part of the reason why it's worked for as long as it has. Nobody's sort of like, oh, but that's my song that needs to go on there, you know. It's even Cam, our drummer, you know, comes up with some really, really great ideas, like especially with harmony stuff. And it's cool for him because he'll just go, hey, as somebody who doesn't understand how any of this stuff works, I kind of want to hear this, do you know what I mean? And it really gives you the impetus to sort of say, oh, is this what you're thinking, is this what you're thinking, is this what you're thinking, until you sort of hit it. It's nice having that delegation of duties. I think you often have a good idea of what the other person's thinking or where they're coming from, and there's special moments when somebody goes, do you know what I mean? You go, oh, do you mean this? And they go, that's exactly what I mean. You know, and you sort of go, well, there we go. Yeah, this whole music thing kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
And how about with the writing, because you know, Ryan plays bass and sings, so do you ever have to think, oh, hang on, that riff's a bit tricky, I should simplify it because the vocals are going there?
Yeah, we've gotten a lot better with that over time. There was certainly stuff early where it's like, probably wrote this stuff thinking, yeah, we'll get dedicated bass player, or, you know, when we initially started the band years and years ago, we were a 5-piece.
Oh, wow.
So we had a different guy singing, and we had a dedicated bass player, and Ryan was playing guitar as well, and he's a very good guitar player, and you know, I think we wanted to sound like Def Leppard Hysteria, so it was like as many vocals as possible, as many layers as possible, and ended up working in our favor because he's got such a great voice, he's a really, really good bass player as well. He just has a you know, some guys who play guitar totally can't play bass.
Yep.
They play bass like a guitar player, and that's me. and then some guitar players just have this thing where they can really lay back and, you know, sit in and play bass like a bass player, and he's kind of got that knack. He'll even say it's gotten easier for him over the years with the writing, where it's like, okay, cool, you're definitely going to be singing in that part, so maybe don't put crazy scale runs in or something, just pummel the root note. Or, and certainly with the, you know, next batch of stuff as well, that's a big part of the production process for us as well, is before we commit to anything, especially before we record drums, it's, let's at least have an idea of what the vocals are going to be doing, and then we can build parts that complement them, rather than, you know, there's nothing worse than you write a piece of music and there's a particular guitar line or a particular drum accent that you commit to, and it clashes with, it makes it impossible to sing anything over it.
Oh, yeah.
Anything that's particularly difficult, he sort of has this knack where it's like, he'll go, this is impossible, and then he'll just sort of work on it, and then suddenly he'll be able to do it. So I don't know how he plays and sings some of the songs, though. It's, yeah, it's pretty, pretty terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, he does a great job, though, isn't it?
Yeah, he really, really does. And I, you know, I always kind of have that blind faith in him as well. It's like, he'll be able to do it. You've done it before.
Well, actually, I noticed you guys, or yourself, a big King's X fan.
Yes,
yeah, massive. Actually, my brother and I saw them in 94 over in the States when we were over there.
Oh,
and that was great. Just seeing that, you know, the sound coming out of this three-piece, I mean, same as you guys, really. But, you know, it's just, it's great to hear that. And, you know, he's doing all these things going on.
Yeah, that would have been Dogman as well.
That's right. Yeah,
like my favorite album ever. So I haven't seen him live, but we find it, like, really funny story. A buddy of mine has a rock webzine thing, and when they did the KXM album, he said, "Oh, I know you like King's X. Do you want to interview Doug for me?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really cool guy to interview. And he said to me, he's like, "So obviously, like, you're a muso. What do you, you know?" He was like vaguely interested. And I said, "Oh, actually, I'm going to be in LA in, you know, a month."
Yeah.
He's like, "Man, we got to catch up," kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean? And yeah, sure enough, it's like we were there. It was the day before we started a tour. And I was like, you know what? I'll just send this guy an email and see if he's serious. And he was like, "Hey, if you're in town, let's get dinner tonight. I'll come and pick you up." And we ended up hanging out with him and spent maybe 4 or 5 hours, you know, went out to dinner with him, and he was just the best dude, you know. It was such a surreal experience, and he ended up funny as well, because he came to the show the next night, but he actually missed our set. He sort of got there just as we finished, and he was like, "Hey man, like, when do you guys start?" It's like, "Oh, we just finished." And he was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry," you know. But just a wonderful human, you know what I mean? And so incredibly humble. And it's weird when you meet, there's that sort of, like, with some musicians I've met, they sort of have that false self-deprecating thing, whereas it's part of the thing that they do. But he sort of understood. He was like, you know, we were never a big band, and, you know, he understood that they were a great band, but they just weren't a successful band. And he seemed to really have it all, sort of have his house in order, you know what I mean? There were people at the show who were like, "Oh my God, you know, Doug, you're the best," kind of thing. He's like, "Man, I just, you know, play music that I love." And it's nice when there's that high correlation between someone who's, you know, got a lot of musical integrity and a lot of personal integrity as well.
Yeah.
King's X, you know, I probably first heard them, my uncle, who's a bass player, was sort of like, "Hey, you know, you should check these guys out." And they're the band that, you know, when you meet musos, one of two things inevitably happens. You either get on really well, or you get on really well and you realize you're like King's X.
Yeah.
And that's always the band. No matter, like, everywhere I've been in the world, if somebody goes, "Oh, do you like King's X?" And you go, "Yeah, I like King's X," you're instantly best mates. You know, there's something about that band. It's like a cult. Almost like, you know, the same thing with a band like Rush, you know what I mean? It's like their fans are so dedicated and appreciative of the music. So and in terms of the way they play, it's, they were the band that sort of, for us, it was like, hey, you can sound big as a three-piece without having to overthink it. They're always a band, it's like, we're recording, it's like, what would King's X do here? You know, if you get stuck. So yeah, they're definitely a big influence.
So your dad plays guitar too, does he?
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it was probably the last thing I wanted to do because my dad played guitar. Mm. You know, I think especially when you're a teenager, you know, you have this, when you're trying to establish an identity, often the easiest thing to do is just do the opposite of what your parents do. And I think I kind of tried everything else. And yeah, when I was about 14 or 15, it was like, actually, I like music and I like guitar. And I'm gonna start bugging this guy and, you know, borrowing his guitars and sort of never giving them back. And and I mean, it's a really awesome thing for us. Anytime we play in town, you know, him and the other guys, their parents will come out and, you know, they really like what we do as well. We're very fortunate there. But I think that appreciation for guitar and for guitar gear as well really comes from him. And, you know, he's got a workshop where he builds and he's kind of a mad scientist in a lot of ways. So I think that appreciation if you're going to, a big thing for him as well was like, you know, if you're going to do something, do it well, yep. You know, and really, really throw yourself into it and enjoy the process of learning. And it was kind of always great having that support.
So he was your pretty much main inspiration to play guitar then?
Yeah, probably, you know, which is interesting. There's a track on the album, the last track, Instrumental, where we were recording and I said, oh, you know, I gotta go outside, check out this sound that I've got going at the moment, play some guitar. Like, I'll just put this backing track on, have a noodle over it. And we ended up recording him on there. So it was sort of like, oh, by the way, we recorded all of that. You're going to be on the album. Because I probably never would have been able to convince him to do it otherwise. So
yeah.
that was a cool moment where it's, you know, you kind of get to trade back and forth.
So, yeah.
You know, the song's this kind of like three-part thing where it starts off as like a slow funk thing and then there's a quick section in the middle and there's a trading section in the middle of that quick section, and that's me and him going back and forth.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And then the ending solos are like every different guitar and amp that I own sort of like trading with myself, so that was a fun thing to do as well.
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and again, that was an afterthought, like, well, we've got this jam we recorded. Should we do it? It's like, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? Someone might accidentally enjoy it. Put it on there.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, cause I like, you know, the funk rock as well, again, more the extreme type thing, you know, so it's cool.
Oh, yeah, big time, you know, those guys. And it to me, it reminds me of, there's a Pat Travis song. I forget the name of it, but it's just an instrumental thing, you know, and they just trade back and forth and it's got that kind of heavy funk rock thing happening.
Yep.
So it was sort of like, well, if, you know, I love Pat Travis. If he can get away with it, we can get away with it. So
yeah, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So did your dad actually teach you guitar, or you went to another teacher?
It was very much a case of like, all right, if you're going to do this, well, here are all the tools you need.
Yep.
If you need help, ask me. Otherwise, just go for it. And you know, the resources that I had available to me, I was really lucky. I got to start with all the best stuff. So I sort of never had an excuse. And I often say that to parents where it's like, you know, what should I do? You know, should I buy them a cheap, crummy guitar and see if they stick with it? Or should I invest and buy something good? And it's always that payoff between, and I always say, it's like, well, if you buy something good, you know, up to what you can afford, you'll probably always be able to at least get 90% of your money back on something that's good. And then the kids don't have any excuse. You know, it becomes all about the playing rather than, oh, I was playing and, you know, my guitar just doesn't stay in tune, or the action's too high, or so it's that sort of process of like, you know, good teachers never make it feel like they're actually teaching.
Yeah.
And they make it feel like you've done everything. But looking back in hindsight, it's like, well, if I didn't have all this great stuff, and if I didn't have, you know, the collection of like guitar magazines and all these sort of resources laying around that I could, you know, discover by accident, then it would have been a lot more difficult for me. He also, you know, I've got really lucky where he teaches as well. So it was sort of like, I could just sort of sit in for hours at a time and watch him teach guitar as well. And that probably taught me more than anything else, because I got to A, watch a good teacher instruct, and B, it's like you can identify in other people by the things you really want to try to do or things not to do, and you sort of really get an interesting perspective on that, I find, anyway.
Yeah, I find it's always interesting with, you know, people that got parents that play music, and you learn, because like my daughter, she's 21 now, but she's pretty much grown up around the music, and I mean, she plays guitar, does solo gigs now, but I've never really sat down and, you know, gave her proper lessons, like wicker lessons, you know,
that
type of thing. She just picks it up and, you know, occasionally says, hey, how do you do that type of thing?
I know you can do this, so how about you teach me, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I remember having a lot of moments like that growing up where it's like, man, what's this thing that I'm listening to, you know what I mean? Similar, it's like, oh, that's tapping. It's like, what's that?
Yeah.
And, you know, before the YouTube era as well, it's like you didn't see somebody do something. It was that much more difficult to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
I always think, you know, especially in the 80s, it's like if you never got to see Van Halen play live, how would you figure out that he's tapping?
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to go through a similar experience of discovery. I think in that respect as well, it's, you know, you look at particular eras of music, even with the grunge thing as well, which while it wasn't about technicality, it was probably more about having an expressive sound and having a distinct sound. It's sort of like, well, if you were a kid growing up and you heard the Pixies but you never saw them, or you didn't know what gear they used, you'd have to go through like a creative process to try and replicate that.
Yeah.
And in doing so, stumble across something cool, rather than, oh, I can just go to Google or YouTube and look up exactly what these people are using, buy it and try to replicate it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely changed now.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's definitely a brave new world.
Yeah. So yeah, so over to your teachings. How long have you been teaching now for?
Probably 12 years now. I started when I was 16 or 17.
Yep.
I had two or three private students when I was doing that. And the last 5 or 6 years, I do a day at a private school near here, and then I have private students almost every afternoon. So
yep.
And like I said, you know, I probably have a roster of maybe 20, 22 students, and a bunch of casual students as well. So.
Mm.
It's just an ongoing process of refinement and always trying to stay on the ball and either listen to new music or just talking to other teachers and figure out new methods. And because, you know, as you know, it's every student is a brand new challenge, you know, and you both have to kind of feed off one another to figure out how you're gonna make progress.
So yeah, that's right.
I always imagine if I was in that situation taking lessons where it's, you show up for a guitar lesson and you're obviously there for a reason.
Mm.
The first question should always be, so what sort of music do you like?
Yep.
You know? And then that should be the guiding sort of force. Rather than, oh, it's good that you sign up for guitar, so this is how you do exercise A, book one.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is a really good way to put people off anything, I think. But,
yeah.
Like I said, for me, it's a very, very rewarding experience. And, It's always weird to say that it's a job when you get to play guitar all day and you get to see people, you know, you get to be there for those moments when young people have these revelations, you know, where it's like, oh, I can do this. Or that's how you, watching people become competent is a really nice thing to be a part of.
Yeah. I mean, 'cause that's one thing I do. Like, you know, they bring in an exercise book and I, at the back of the book, it's like, okay, write down, you know, 10 to 20 songs, whatever, that you like, well, your parents might like. At least they know how the song goes. Rather than me showing Tom Dooley the song, they've never heard it before. At least they can pick a song they can do. We do try and do a bit of a melody or work towards that, you know, and we'll break the song down. Yeah. So that works well as well.
I think it's learning any new task is, you know, it's, you're on this pathway from incompetence to competence, and it takes a lot of courage to even attempt learning an instrument. Or And then it takes even more courage to sit down at a regular time, develop a routine. And why it's so important, I think, especially for people in their teens to learn an instrument, because it gives you that pathway from childhood to adulthood where it's like, okay, cool, here's a really safe environment to learn about the challenges that are going to come your way in, you know, in life in general. And you can develop methods to deal with them, and at the same time, you get to be able to do something that's genuinely awesome.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Yuzition?
Yeah, I have.
Oh,
I often see their ads pop up on YouTube, and that's a good example of the thing we're talking about. It's like, you know, now with YouTube, it's like you're actually getting these resources that are interactive, and it's not just like, oh, cool, I can watch somebody do something 100 times over, but it's really, really exciting stuff.
Yeah, well, I've got a lot of my students on that app, and it's just amazing because it picks up the sound of the guitar, so, you know, it tests out their timing, their clarity of the notes, and just a syllabus, you know, it's stuff from level 1 to level 10. And and it's a really good way of working up. And the kids think of it as a bit of a game too, so they're always trying to compete, they get better scores, but by doing that, they're improving their playing because they're getting better technique and getting notes right on time. So
it's called playing guitar for a reason, right?
Yeah.
There's that element of it being play, you know, which is often very, very overlooked, as opposed to operating a guitar or something. I have a really good buddy who is an amazing guitar player, but he always refers to himself as a guitar operator. He's like, mate, I don't know what's going on. I just work this thing, you know what I mean?
And
I get it to do what I want, but I'm not too involved in the ins and outs. So as opposed to, you know, like that idea of play. But I've been meaning to check it out, and it's one of those things where often you build up that like latent, oh, I should check this out, and then you hear about it, it's like, all right, cool. I need to properly do this and go beyond the ads. There's one of my students who I've been teaching for quite a while is doing Rock School as well, which is a UK thing. Which is, I was really, really skeptical about when he came in. I was like, oh, I'm doing this thing from a book. It's like, oh, all right. And the more time I spend with it, it's like, man, this is fantastic. You can do your AMEB, it's AMEB certified, so you can do your grades.
Yep.
And you can play like a bunch of songs that sound like Led Zeppelin and Metallica. And, you know, the way they sort of bring in at higher levels, it's like, cool. If you're on the sort of stream of doing rock stuff, you can incorporate a fusion track, or you can incorporate a sort of jazzy funk thing and sort of branch out from there too.
Yeah, that's cool.
The thing that's encouraging that I've seen as well is with even the what we have over here, the higher education certificates, you know, you can incorporate a lot of contemporary rep into that now as well. And a lot of the performance-based stuff is that it's not purely how well you play, it's also musicianship and like playing in a group and interacting with the other musicians. And it's nice to see that be a thing rather than develop robots, we're developing musicians.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's why, because I do drums and keyboard as well, so I
fantastic.
And join them all together, you know, once a month and have a bit of a jam, and it's great seeing them all interact.
It constantly blows me away. I do some fill-in teaching for one of my friends' music school, and his focus is getting young bands together and, you know, having them play in ensembles. And then once every 6 months, I think he books out a room at a pub and they do a concert. And when I was 13 or 14, I could barely tie my own shoelaces, let alone play like, you know, a Bruno Mars song with four other people perfectly in tune and in time and play it with like vigor and attitude. It's just sort of like I'm teaching these kids going, guys, just please, please stick at this, because you're gonna absolutely dominate. If you stick at this for another 5 years, you know, you'll be blowing all the other pros out of the water. It's so cool to see. I often make that point to my students. It's like, hey, if you wanna get good at something and you like a particular player, go and listen to who they listen to, because guitars, if you learn like the history of guitar playing, often that kind of grades roughly to competence as well. It's like, you know, start off learning some Chuck Berry licks, and you know, or go and learn an Elvis song or a Muddy Waters song or something like that, where you can focus on the attitude behind it. And then once you've got the attitude right, you can really, you know, you can go and learn some Beatles songs or some Stones and some Sabbath and some Led Zeppelin, and then go and learn some Metallica. And you know, it's, and then the bands that listen to, you know, the sort of modern stuff where it's deriving from that, it's nice how it really, how you see progress of a particular genre or art form. And it's like, you can just track the history of that. Because really, I mean, it's the history of ideas. So if you understand the history of the ideas behind it, you'll understand the ideas behind it, and then you'll be able to implement them.
So do you have any favorite exercises you like to give your students that you could either talk about or demonstrate?
I'll grab my guitar.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of kids who may not actively listen to music want to listen to stuff that's on the radio. And, you know, it's like that song Axis of Awesome did, you know, the four chords.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
a lot of the time you build around G, and it's kind of, for me, it's like, okay, cool, we can take a bunch of open chords, you know, E minor, C.
Yep.
But rather than have to worry about these difficult chord changes, keep the top three strings the same. It's like, you know, it's like the Wonderwall thing, the drone thing. So it's like you might play a G, and instead of learning C, learn how to play C at nine.
Yep.
It's a really lovely sounding chord. And, you know, you can impress your friends by saying this fancy name too. So, you know, you can work on a simple change like that, and you might learn a D sus 4 rather than a D, an E minor 7 rather than an E minor, and that way you take half the fingers out of the equation. They just grip, and you can sit there and play through those, and then from there it's working up. Then you can focus on the right hand. So I like to kind of, for real beginners who want to learn how to play songs, I really like showing them that. Obviously, the most fun is when you get kids come in and say they love Iron Maiden or they love Metallica, and they want to play guitar fast and they want to play aggressively. And I've got a girl she's 14, and similar thing, you know, just absolutely devours music. It's like every new week she discovers, you know, it's Judas Priest one week and it's Thin Lizzy the next. And a lot of the stuff that I'll do with her is obviously based around a lot of the soloing stuff. So it's, I think my ultimate favorite thing is the Paul Gilbert sixes lick in, you know, the intense rock thing that. Building that kind of thing up where you can just work on alternate picking with one sequence.
Yeah.
And you get that, you know, like he says in the video, it's like the hard thing is crossing over from one string to another. So once they drill that enough often, then it's like, I find that's a really good exercise so that they can sort out their alternate picking. And then from there, sort of explaining, it's like, well, go take that, play it with a metronome, and then realize that, you know, each pick stroke corresponds to a rhythmic subdivision.
Yep.
So you can take something that's just an exercise and link it to something that's inherently musical. And I always find that's a big thing. You know, there's a lot of people who can play guitar fast.
Mm.
It's a rapid flurry of notes with no real rhythmic value. I often feel like that's how I play guitar a lot of the time as well. It's just like, wow, there's just a lot of notes and, you know, hopefully land on a good one. But yeah, I find that most of the time with the melodic aspects, a lot of the students I teach anyway, once they understand, you know, the major scale and the minor scale, then most kids have really good instincts for melody. The thing that really helps them develop, I think, is, you know, working on the rhythmic aspects and linking the alternate picking and the synchronizing and stuff like that. So that's the exercise that did it for me anyway, that really kind of broke down a lot of doors. Even I'm trying to think of something that isn't as kind of wiggly or shreddy as well. Another thing is just taking the major scale and, you know, either harmonizing it across one string as a bunch of triads, or doing it as sevenths, I find is a really, really handy exercise for tuning the ear and, you know, just mapping out the fretboard. So they're really, really basic, I think. They're sort of universally important exercises that, out of everything I've tried over the years, you know, they're often the really, really handy ones, rather than, you know, you can spend so much time doing stuff like that, but it's really, I remember watching an interview with Kiko Loureiro, who's, you know, from Angra and now in Megadeth. And he made a similar point where he was like, you can sit there and you can play and play and play, but you're spending hours. You want to, even if you're practicing techniques, you want to play music.
Yep.
He said, so make it melodic and make it sound, make it so that you focus on a physical exercise, but you also develop a melodic musical sensibility at the same time.
Yep. Actually, probably a good example is a Crazy Train. I get a lot of my students doing that because it's got that, you know, little melody. And it's working on those different fingers as well.
So yeah, quite... yeah, that's a really, really good one.
Yeah.
In terms of song, I mean, even in terms of particular songs to learn as well, it's, like I was saying, it's such a cliche, but I found Wonderwall's a really good one.
Yep.
You know, you've got these interesting drone chords. The chords are really, you know, it sounds really nice when you sing the melody over it.
Yeah.
And the strumming's... They have to have that breakthrough where it's like, cool, my right hand's actually corresponding to a pulse.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I can separate that out, where I'm, you know, getting that going, and particular strokes have to be in certain order and in a certain place so that I don't sort of look like I'm getting electrocuted while I'm playing.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. And Crazy Train, that's always a good reference point. Even Iron Man's a good one for beginners.
Yeah.
I find, you know, it's Sabbath, so it's slow and it's sludgy. And the other one that's probably really effective, or even for soloing stuff, you know, the solo in Whole Lot of Love or something like that, where you get to do these things where you kind of whittle around and then you stop, and it's got that stop-start kind of thing. I mean, I grew up, the first band I think I really got into with Thin Lizzy, so...
Okay, yeah.
A lot of that stuff I find is if the kids are into it, you know, I always sort of go, hey, listen to this, what do you think? And they'll either go, oh, yeah, it's okay.
it's a bit old.
Yeah, it's a bit old. I don't know. Obviously the other band learning AC/DC songs, it's like every second kid comes to play guitar because they want to play like AC/DC.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, you know, even say Highway to Hell, and if the kids can't do the D/F#, it's just playing a simple D and a, you know, lifting off those, playing like a 3-string or a 4-string version of
G.
I find that's really effective too, and sort of gets them going like, oh yeah, this stuff's good, and I can work on my timing. And I often find it's if you focus on the fundamentals, and by the time kids are getting to learning how to tap and learning how to sweep pick, they're often in a point where you just kind of go, okay, cool, here's the technique, watch, and if you have any questions, ask me, otherwise just try to do it.
There's
a really cool show on Netflix called Chef's Table. I don't know if you've seen
it. No, I haven't seen it.
It's just a total, like, foodie, you know, it's about top chefs in the world, and it's more about their life story and how they got into doing what they're doing. But there's this one episode, this French guy, and he's saying how he, you know, as a teenager, he didn't know what he wanted to do, so he thought he'll get a job in a kitchen, and the chef just sort of, head chef went, cool, make me an apple pie.
Yeah.
And he was like, I didn't know how to do it, so I just kind of guessed, and I guess it was okay. And there's a scene on there where his daughter, who's maybe 9 or 10, and he's going, yeah, I'm going to make an apple pie with my daughter. She's never done it before. And the way he explains, he goes, okay, cool, like, watch and try to do what I do. But if you have any questions, stop and ask. I remember watching that and going, actually, that's a very good philosophy to take to learning the guitar. It's like, once you're sort of at that stage where you understand the basics, then let's just sit here and I'll demonstrate something and try to do it. And if you get really stuck, then please don't sit there and struggle. Like, ask for help, and
that's good.
They feel like they earn it a little bit more, or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I've got one more question too.
Yes.
From a listener, which was actually Cesare, the guy that got me on to you, Cesare.
Oh, awesome.
He just wanted to know about your gear, what you're using at the moment.
Well, I probably have most of it right here. I'll show you, even though it's all kind of covering cables. It's like the most boring rig rundown ever, because there's two things in it. I'll show you here. I'll talk about it first, I guess. Probably the start of last year, I got an Axe-FX, it was always in the back of my mind, like it'd be good to have a sort of all-in-one solution and things like that. And yeah, hearing a couple of, it was actually Brett Kingman, who is kind of, you know, he's the gear demo guy on YouTube. I guess him and Pete Thorne, they're the guys that I think kind of do that format better than anyone else. And years ago, I did a gig with a friend of mine who's, she's an amazing sort of soul singer. And we opened up this festival down in the Southwest here. And, you know, it was James Rain and Jimmy Barnes and Ian Moss and all those guys. And Brett was there playing with James. And I was like, oh man, you know, you've got all the gear. You must have this crazy pedal board, right? And he was like, oh, nah, I play a Tele and plug a Line 6 M13 in, and I just make sure that there's like a twin as backline.
Yeah.
And wow. I was like, but you've got all the gear, man. He's like, yeah, I don't care about it. You know, I'm going to use what's easiest. And there was a video of him playing through the Fractal stuff, and he was like, you know, this is how I pull a sound, and I do this, this, and this, and it's really easy as long as you know how to use a real thing. And it sounded so good. And I was like, all right, maybe I need to look into these things. So I use the Fractal AX8.
Okay.
And then I guess which is I always have sitting here. I've got it on a little stand in the studio.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's like a medium-sized multi-effects pedal board. It fits in my hand luggage, which is great. And I just do everything in that and plug it in direct to the PA most of the time. If I don't have, if there's no monitors or there's a crummy PA, I've got a, I'll just take a powered wedge, or I've got a Matrix power amp and I'll take a 112 or a 212.
Yep.
And then I'll grab the main guitar I use. And then, yeah, at the moment, I guess the main guitar's this guy. It's a PRS single cut.
Yep.
And I picked it up. I got really lucky with this guitar, I think about 2, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe. We were touring the States, and Guitar Center had a run out on all their like pre-2010 PRS stuff. It was like 50 or 40% off, you know?
Yeah.
It was one of those things I was like, always wanted to try a single cut by them. And it was like, I walked into this Guitar Center and I played maybe 4 or 5 of their other guitars and they were okay. And then I picked this one off the shelf and strummed a G chord on it and went, I'm going to buy this guitar, you know, it's got it going on. And it's the main guitar I use on the album, and you know, it's what I use for gigs. And so yeah, it's pretty, I've got a couple of other PRS guitars as well.
Yep.
So it's normally one of those and the AX8, and that's pretty much what I take to a gig or take on tour now. So
that's good.
Yeah, it's, you know, the album's mostly it's this guitar and it's all quad track, so it's like a set of I've got an old dual rectifier that I found. It's one of the old 2-channel ones. It sounds really good. And a friend of mine runs a guitar company called Anarchy Audio. He's this one-man operation, and you know, his pedals are great, and he makes basically a Klon style drive.
Yep.
And it was that in front of the rectifier, and then we had a bunch of other amps. My the guy who produced the album, Troy, he's got a really cool old 70s J&P Marshall, which is just the loudest thing in the universe. It's like an atomic bomb going off. It's that, and you know, I've got a lot of amps, so it was sort of, I can't really remember what we use on what, but the rectifier's on everything, and then blending that with a different amp for a different thing. And yeah, in the AX8, they've got a model of the Mesa Mark IIc Plus, which I guess is, you know, that's the Metallica amp or the John Petrucci amp, and that's the one that sounds the best in the box to me. So I just basically use that and plug this guitar in, and I don't have to worry about somebody accidentally putting the microphone right on the speaker cone and having it sound terrible, or you know, everything's consistent and controlled. And I have 3 or 4 main sounds that I use, so it's press a button and bring up a particular sound, and yeah, it's so lightweight and easy and sounds really, really good. It's the best live guitar sound I've ever had anyway.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, there's, I know guys who use the Kemper or the Helix and those kind of modeling solutions, and that kind of seems to be the, if not the way people go for all their gigs, at least for the kind of fly date stuff, it's a very, very efficient solution.
Yep.
I do a lot of tutorial videos on my YouTube channel for them as well. It's kind of like, I figure stuff out and go, oh, that's really not obvious, I better tell people about it.
Yeah, I saw some of those, they're good.
They're good fun for me as well. It's sort of like, it's a good learning experience.
Yeah.
You don't have to save me from myself. It's-
Now, as far as with the band, so you said you're writing material at the moment for a new album, hopefully next year.
Yeah, hopefully. That's the plan. We've got about 10 songs down at the moment. I think we want to try and do 12 this time around.
Okay.
And we've been working a lot of those up, and so hopefully it's always difficult with timelines and
Yeah.
things that come up in people's lives and stuff like that. And hopefully, maybe if not the middle of the year, then the end of the year that's probably the goal we're looking to work towards at the moment. And if that doesn't eventuate, I'd say we'll probably definitely at least do a single next year,
Yep.
which we've done in the past, where we sort of have this thing where we just try to do one thing a year at the minimum.
Yep.
I mean, this year we weren't on tour, but we did a vinyl release, so that was
Okay.
kind of the big item where a lot of people have been asking for it, and we bundled the album together with four bonus tracks. And it's like it's got splatter vinyl and posters, and it's very much a once in a lifetime kind of thing for us. And it was an expensive operation, but it's such a cool product, that hopefully, yeah, if we sell the small number that we did, we'll at least make our money back on it, and it's a nice thing to do. So yeah, I mean, that would be the idea. We've got a couple of smaller festivals in Europe lined up for next year as well in the middle of the year. So that would be the deadline, I guess. It's like, well, either get a new album out before that and tour it, or go over and do the festivals and then come home and sort of start thinking about, release the album at the end of the year or something. So yeah, you definitely learn how to be patient with these things.
Oh, for sure.
From when I started, it's like, hey, I wrote a song, let's record it today. To, well, we may as well wait until we're really ready to launch it and when we're happy with the final product. So it's like anything. We're not beholden to a particular label or anything like that. You're just kind of beholden to your audience. So we always try to, like I said, have something out every year. So there'll be something, either a single and a video or a brand new full length.
And so the album Back to Zero and all the EPs are available on iTunes. Is it the best way? Or you've got a website you can go to?
We have a web store, just a Bandcamp store, so it's ragdollrock.bandcamp.com. You can buy vinyl direct there, and we do have distribution in Australia and Europe as well. Our distro is through Firestarter, so that's Adam, who plays drums in Birds of Tokyo. That's his distro thing, and him and his wife have been awesome, really. I'd send them an email out of the blue, like, hey, we want to do distro, but I don't know how to do it. They absolutely went like above and beyond, and they're awesome. They help out so many bands like us who are at that stage where it's like, well, how do we get our CD to be in JB Hi-Fi? That's the mark of success now, because they're sort of the only like large retail chain going. And all the stuff's on Spotify and YouTube, and we're quite active on our Facebook and social media as well. So if any of this rambling has piqued your interest, you can go and listen to all the stuff for free, and if you like it, you can buy it direct from the horse's mouth.
And you also got the gig coming up with Race to Do next year.
Yeah, that'll be
Pretty
a
good.
lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that, especially because I know the band's now it's sort of like this Aussie supergroup. They've got Bob Spencer playing guitar, who was in Skyhooks and the Angels, and Mark Evans from AC/DC playing bass, and it's shaping up to be a really, really good gig. Oh, it's built around it's a Bon Scott themed festival in Fremantle next year, so. There's a bunch of cool events happening around it as well, which I don't know if they've announced it, so I won't say anything about it.
No,
But
that's right.
yeah, it's gonna be there's gonna be some cool stuff. And Rose Tattoo are one of those bands. They've got that sort of thing where they're obviously very appreciated at home, but anytime we go overseas, people go, "Oh, Australian bands, we love the Angels and we love Rose Tattoo." And it's like, wow, that's cool. It's cool that these kind of things really cool to see them have success. We played this really small dive bar in France last year, and everybody loved Rose Tattoo. It was amazing. They were like, yep, Rose Tattoo played here. however many years ago, and you know, packed the place out, and yeah, they're just this like phenomenon in France, you know.
Wow. That's great.
Which is pretty cool, you it know. Is. They're such a rough and tumble Aussie band to have an audience, and you know, the refined cultural capital of the world is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really good.
Good on you, man.
All right,
thanks so much for that, Adam.
Thank you.
Yep. Stay in touch.
For
really
sure.
Appreciate it.
Will do. Thanks, mate. See you later.
I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. It was really great talking to Leon and finding out all about the band and about his guitar playing, which is amazing. Now, also, don't forget that some of the exercises that Leon demonstrated on the podcast will also be on my closed Facebook group. One of them, the little Paul Gilbert riff that he does, is one that I started playing years ago as well. So it's a really good exercise. So make sure you check that out. And to gain access to my closed Facebook group, you can do so. The first month is free, you don't have to pay anything, and you'll be able to get lessons and tips, and also put in your requests for tips, which people have done. And I've put up some videos on how to do certain things. And don't forget, you can go to my website, becomeaguitaristtoday.com. That's all one word. And I've also just updated that, where you can listen to other podcasts and check out the videos of the people who've been on the podcast. And you can find out all about the different packages that I have available. Now, next week, I have one of Leon and myself's influencers, Mr. Doug Pinnick from the band King's X. So I hope you can join me for that one. He's actually my first bass player guest on the podcast. So until next week, keep jamming.